My name is Sandy Fahler. Today is April 27th, 2006, and I'm interviewing Emily Early, retired editor of technical publications for the UW-Madison Gaylord Nelson Institute for Environmental Studies. This interview is for the Oral History Project on the Madison campus. Good morning.
Good morning.
Let's start with your early years. If you could talk about your childhood, your early education.
Well, I grew up in Manhattan in the winter, and in the summer we went to Cold Spring Harbor, Long Island, and I was always much happier there. And I became a sailor, saltwater sailor. And I went to a private school in New York, Chapin School, became a bird watcher. My family were always interested in nature, so I became a bird watcher. We had a wonderful science teacher in fourth, I don't remember, when I was a teen. And she introduced us to birding in the Ramble in Central Park.
Tell me, anyway, what was the Bramble?
Ramble.
Ramble, what was that?
Well, it was just a wilder part of Central Park.
Oh, okay.
Which is still a very good birding area.
Mm-hmm.
For a while it wasn't safe to go alone, but
it's
safe again now. Well, anyway, my childhood was not especially happy.
When were you born?
1916.
Okay.
And I don't know how much you want me to go into.
Well, anything you want to talk about.
Well, my father committed suicide when I was just about 11. And mother was very neurotic. It just wasn't a good upbringing. But I had heard all the goings-on that night, and I knew something was terribly wrong. I was sleeping on a sleeping porch. My other sisters and brother, well, my older sister wasn't there. She was off the camp. My younger brother couldn't hear it. He was another. But I remember hearing my mother call my older brother to go get the doctor. And then I could hear noises that I think were stomach problems. Anyway, the next morning my younger brother and I were hauled off to swim, play with a neighbor. And my brother, who hadn't heard anything, was out swimming. I was just sitting on the beach wondering what to do when Dr. Henry Sloan Corcoran, the uncle of the one who just died, came striding along. He was a family friend and our minister. And he called my brother in and then sat between us. And, "Your dear father has just died of pneumonia, and you have to be very kind and good for your mother." Well, I knew it wasn't true. But for years, that lie was maintained. So I guess after a while, I suppressed all these memories. Until my older brother, when we were on a trip somewhere, he said, you mean you still remember that guff about father?" And he had hated my father. So he was neurotic. The whole family is full of neurotic people. Anyway, I did like Chapin School, and I had lots of good friends.
Were you a good student?
Yeah.
I would imagine.
my sister had gone to Vassar but hated it, so I didn't want to go there. And this was the beginning of Bennington College, and some of my mother's friends were supporting it. So she decided I should go there. It was fine with me. A whole bunch of my class went, as a matter of fact.
Well, so there was no question you were going to college.
Oh,
that was a given.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Took that, take college boards, all of that stuff. Except one thing, I loved Greek, but the second year of Greek, my final year in school, I wasn't allowed to take Greek because the then headmistress of Chapin School was a family friend, and she taught household economics. So my mother made me take that. Anyway, Bennington was wonderful, but I don't think they caught on that I was speeded up, running the student government, doing much too many things. But they hadn't had anybody go to graduate school. So they picked me to go, and they pushed me through in 3 years and applied for here.
So you, when you went to Bennington, you didn't have any thoughts of what kind of career you were looking for or even that you were going to have a career?
Oh, yes, I was determined I was going to have a career.
Okay, okay. Did you know what you wanted?
No, except that I was a rabid New Dealer, and so I did a lot of labor economics. In fact, my thesis, which was the equivalent of a master's thesis, was on the coal industry and John L. Lewis. So Bennington and I agreed this was the place to come.
And were you the first person from Bennington then to go on to graduate school?
Yes.
Oh, that's interesting.
And at first, this campus wouldn't accept me because Bennington didn't have any grades. And I remember there was a letter from Dean E.B. Fred saying something, no, I hadn't had any science, I had too much social studies and music, that was about it. But anyway, they must have doctored up my transcript or something, tried again. So Dean Fred sent my application over to Salek Pillman, mm-hmm. who was a softie, and he said, oh, let her in on probation.
But you hadn't taken any science in?
Or very little.
Okay, okay.
It was a fascinating place, mm-hmm. but it didn't give me a very good rounded education.
And what did your family think about coming to Wisconsin?
Oh, they had a fit. They didn't think there was anything civilized west of the Hudson.
Had they ever even been west of the Hudson?
Only way out to California.
Oh, okay.
I don't think anywhere in between. I don't think. Anyway, they said, and for goodness sakes, don't marry a Middle Westerner. Well, I did marry my instructor, which the more they argued against that, the more determined I was.
So. Mm-hmm. So you came to Wisconsin in what year?
37. And got a master's that June. And I had already won a thing called the National Institute of Public Affairs, which was a thing where they placed people in a key federal position, but no salary. You had to finance it yourself. And because I was from here, I was given a job in the office of the head of the Social Security Administration. Okay. And Arthur Altmaier's chief assistant was a man named Wilbur Cohen, now deceased. And so I was in Wilbur Cohen's office. No pay, but right up at the top of the whole thing.
Okay. Now, when you came to campus in 1937, and you were in a graduate program in the social sciences.
Yeah.
Were there a lot of women students at this?
There were only 8,000 students in it. Anyway. Mm-hmm. No, there were very few. There was one other woman grad student in economics from Rhode Island. I've lost track of her. And Elizabeth Brandeis was very prominent then. So I think that was what had attracted her.
Okay. Now, did you have any problems then as a woman in those programs or not?
No,
like any other student?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, no, it was fun. Lots of potential beaux, and it was fun.
Sure. Where did you
and
live?
And I minored in political science.
Okay.
I knew Ruth Doyle way back then. She was a class behind us.
And where did you live?
Well, in those days, a woman graduate student had to get the approval of the Dean of Women from an approved list. And the first one I was assigned was on Princeton Avenue. And it was a German refugee family. He was an entomologist, and he was breeding fruit flies in the kitchen. And he was very nice. Uh-huh. But his wife and his two daughters were busybodies and listened to our telephone calls. I think they read our mail. Anyway, she was just awful. And there was another grad student assigned the same place. She was a grad student in French. Well, it got so bad that we both decided to go to see Dean Troxell and ask for a change. Mm-hmm. And so we were both moved to a different place on West Lawn. That was fine. Could walk to campus from mm-hmm. there. Mm-hmm. Was very near where they're putting up that high rise.
Right. So what was the social life like then?
Well, I was sort of adopted by older people. First place, Elizabeth Brandeis and her husband and their close friends sort of adopted me and invited me for Sunday dinner and Thanksgiving. But also, my mother apparently had some remote connection with a woman named Dodge, whose daughter still alive, Emily Dodge.
That sounds familiar.
Mm-hmm. I think she's a lawyer, retired, mm-hmm. lives mm-hmm. in Oakwood. Anyway, for some reason or other, Mrs. Dorothy Reed Mendenhall, does that name ring a bell?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Well, she adopted me, and several of her friends. So I was always being invited for nice dinner, meeting interesting people.
Mm-hmm. So then, how many...
But I also had some young people I drew things with.
Sure. You had, then you were in graduate school for 2 years?
No, 1 year.
1 year.
And but at the end of the year, I'd already gotten engaged to my instructor.
Oh, yeah.
But he had to finish his thesis, PhD, and I had already won this thing.
I see.
So I spent that year in Washington, and I think, I can't remember where he was, whether he, London School of Economics or here, I can't remember. But at the end, I came back for another year, got married in June, and then came back to another year of graduate work.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I was assuming I'd go on for a PhD.
Mm-hmm.
And Jim was all for it, but he never lifted a finger to help, so it got more and more difficult.
Mm-hmm. So then, you came back to Madison, and then have you lived in Madison then since that time, or have you...
Except that... going to Washington that year, then that brought me back here, 39, 40,
mm-hmm.
40, 41. Well, I decided to get pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And my first child was born, oh, I know. Jim by then, after we were married, he became an assistant professor. And
here in Madison.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we were living in an apartment on Dayton Street, across from the engineering library. But when we found that we were going to have a child, we bought this house. But we knew we couldn't move in because somebody already had a lease on it. Bill Howells used to be professor of anthropology. They were in this house until June. So we just decided to rent it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was December 1st. December 3rd, child was born, Dorothy. Well, in those days, you stayed in the hospital 10 days or 2 weeks. But anyway, December 3rd, well, then Pearl Harbor, December 7th. And Jim was called back. I left out of here. Yes.
That's all right. Back up.
No. We were married December, June 39. So then Jim was called to Washington to help write price control program.
Hmm.
So we had another year in Washington. That year, I had almost the same job I'd had before, but for the munificent salary of $2,600 as a junior economist.
Uh-huh.
So that was fun.
Okay.
And we lived out in the country. Jim had gone to Antioch, and a classmate of his lived in Waterford, Virginia, which is, do you know Washington? Waterford,
a little bit,
a wonderful tourist attraction.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But in those days, it was a very small village, but Wellman Chamberlain's family were trying to restore some of these old houses, and we lived in one of them. And Jim commuted.
Okay. So then you were back in Madison. Pearl Harbor started, Pearl Harbor.
Yeah. So Jim was called back to Washington.
Oh.
That June.
Uh huh.
So then we stayed throughout the war. He worked for price control.
And you didn't work?
I had a baby by
right.
then
right.
and lived out in this village.
Okay.
No, all we could do was roll bandages. And that was irritating because my next door neighbors were black. And they weren't allowed to roll bandages. I rolled bandages and I had a victory garden.
And you were there a year then? Or
3 years.
3 years. Were you bored?
Well, no, there were a few people also commuting.
Oh.
So I had about three good friends.
Mm-hmm.
But I was mixed up still.
Oh, okay. Then you came back to Madison, and your husband resumed his position at the university.
Yes, and by then he was an associate professor.
Mm-hmm.
And we had three children by then.
So you...
Including boy-girl twins.
Oh, that's okay.
So we came back with three children under four.
And by then you had made up your mind you weren't going to continue on with your education and get your PhD.
Yeah. Well, I'd made up my mind when the first one was on the way. Because
mm-hmm.
in those days it was pretty hard to have a job and a family. I had one friend who did it, Fan mm-hmm. Taylor, whom you've probably
mm-hmm.
met.
I know certainly who she is. Was that a hard decision for you to make?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And did you ever think, well, maybe I'll finish it someday, or just...
No.
Yeah.
Because it's a long period of marital problems, mm. psychiatric problems. So.
Mm-hmm.
So, and by the time I got straightened out, it was pretty old, 50s.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And what do your children do?
Now?
Mm-hmm.
Dorothy is a social worker. Well, she doesn't do social work. She teaches at Boston College in social work.
Mm-hmm.
Placement and supervising field work.
Oh.
And then Susie, the girl twin, three and a half years younger, is a nurse.
Oh.
And she was here for a long time
mm-hmm.
in transplant kidney stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Moved to Washington and did that for a while. Then got fed up because she figured the doctors and hospitals were more interested in making money than taking care of the patients. So she quit and worked for a year in North Carolina as home secretary for a congressman, Asheville.
Mm-hmm.
And then she got a job in travel medicine.
Oh.
And did that for a long time and loved it.
Uh-huh.
And in Washington particularly, that's fun. Because first place, you're taking care of well people.
Sure.
But in Washington, she was meeting all kinds of people in politics and diplomats and international people.
Mm-hmm.
Well, her twin brother was a schizophrenic.
Oh.
And he finally died 11 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But that hit him in the first year of college.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
I always knew something was wrong, but...
Hmm. So you stayed home then with your children and eventually somehow came back to the university to work.
After my divorce.
After your divorce.
Yeah.
Okay. And how did you start your career at the university?
The famous Kay Clarenbach.
Yes.
Got me my first job because I didn't feel I had any qualifications at all. My confidence was way down after an unhappy marriage and 5 years of intensive psychotherapy. I finally got my feet on the ground when the marriage went to pot, because when I finally decided to insert myself a little, Jim would say, oh, you better go back to your psychiatrist.
Oh, dear.
He didn't want a wife. Anyway, the job she got me was awful. It was a brand new director of the library school, Margaret Monroe. Have you interviewed her?
I'm a librarian. I went to library school, but
here. Not here?
Yes, here.
When?
I graduated in 1971.
Well, see, that was late. This was
she was
about 65.
Right, she had just left when I started, but I know I heard a lot of stories about her.
Well, she was a ladylike bitch.
Uh-huh.
I mean, the stories were probably not very positive, were they?
Not all of them.
No. Oh, she was so mean to that secretary. And the last straw for me, well, the faculty sort of butted, they knew I was a faculty wife, ex-wife,
mm-hmm.
so they were always asking me political questions about the faculty, because they weren't sure they liked her. Anyway, one day I had a call from a friend, Pete Steiner, who was associate dean of the grad school. He said, Emily, Miss Monroe hasn't sent up her recommendations for such and such fellowships. They're due tomorrow. So this nice secretary and I looked through the stuff on the top of the desk and went through them and sent up some recommendations. She was so mad, well, she was out of town, and she was so mad that she took it out on the poor secretaries. She didn't dare take it out on me, but she was frosty.
Oh, dear.
And I just decided it wasn't worth. So I was
under. Now, was that when library school was at Henry Mall at that point, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
So I was only there 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was unemployed again for quite a while. But I got a new start in life because the Nature Conservancy, which I'd never heard of, was looking for a secretary. The secretary had been Joe Hickey. Does that name ring a bell?
Not.
Well, he was a professor of wildlife ecology, and he was also on the National Board of Nature Conservancy. But he won a Fulbright to Germany, so they needed a new secretary. And in those days, the secretary really took minutes and did things. Now they don't. Now Nature Conservancy's even abolished the secretary. Mm. One of the staff does it on the computer. But anyway, I got that job thanks to Fan Taylor. She knew that she was already involved with them. This was in 1964 or 5. No. Well, 1964 was my first meeting there, yes. Anyway, it was started in 1960.
Mm-hmm.
And she was one of the organizers, but I'd never heard of it before. But they were desperate, I think, for a secretary, because I didn't even know how to type properly. I'd never learned on purpose, because in those days, if you typed, you were put into secretary
sure.
position, and I had higher writing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I got the job. And of course, it opened up a whole new field. It was wonderful.
And you still
I already loved the outdoors. And
you're still part of Nature Conservancy? You're still involved?
I've just gone off after 42 years.
Oh, my.
Because I was very lucky whenever my term was up. You'd be an emeritus trustee, then they'd ask me back. But not this time. Yeah. Because now, they changed the bylaws. You have to be off 3 years.
Oh.
So I don't expect to be asked back at 93, and I wouldn't go even if I were, because my hearing is such a problem.
Yeah. Can you talk about some of the things that occurred with the Nature Conservancy while you were, some of the more important things that you think are, special while you were involved?
Well, we had a first chairman, Paul Olson, had been a science teacher at West, and I guess at Randall, they were very good science teachers. Then he became principal of Midvale School. But he was the first director, and he was able to moonlight with a lot of stuff, use the secretary of the school for his stuff.
Hmm.
And he was very good in acquiring land, getting people to donate land.
Mm-hmm.
But he wasn't fussy enough about the quality.
Mm-hmm.
Partly because he couldn't get out on the land. He'd had polio, and then I think he'd had an automobile accident, so he was very lame. Well, I got more and more agitated because they were accepting some of this land that I didn't, well, several of us didn't think were top quality, and then not managing it.
Mm-hmm.
So, and Paul Olson also wasn't paying enough attention to the national rules and standards.
Oh.
But he wouldn't give up. We had him for 18 years. And I remember one of my first meetings when I was taking notes for the minutes at the annual meeting, and when they were changing the bylaws so that they had a rule that most organs, after two terms, you have to go off. And if you miss too many meetings, you go off, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
They were making this completely open, and I said, why are you doing that? Oh, we can't afford to lose trustees like Grant Cardam and Hugh Wilders, but also he wanted to protect himself.
I see.
But anyway, after 9 years of taking minutes, I rebelled, because I'm not good at taking minutes and joining in the discussion.
Sure.
So mm-hmm. he said, okay, find somebody else. So I did. So then he put me in charge of stewardship, which is what I wanted to do anyway.
Oh.
So I did that for a long time, and it was great fun.
Mm-hmm.
because most of the other chapters by then had a paid staff. We were a long time in having any staff. Fan Taylor took over as chairman after Paul was eased out, but she said she could only do it for 1 year, and she found it very hard to keep up because she didn't have a secretary and couldn't moonlight.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, we've got to get a paid director. So we did, but then we didn't have any other staff for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
I would go to these Midwestern national meetings on stewardship and be the only woman, the only volunteer, the only person over 40. But it was fun.
Yeah. Now, what were your responsibilities then involving stewardship?
Well, seeing that the properties were properly taken care of. So I was in on the beginning of prescribed burning. It just started. And I had a grad student who was doing his thesis on that, so he was my main helper. See, I knew a lot of the faculty by then,
mm-hmm.
so I, even though I wasn't professionally trained in the field, I knew who to get.
Sure.
And I called myself very good nagger.
Now, I know that you just mentioned some names, but who were some of the people that you worked with that you're especially, that you have a lot of respect for in terms of Nature Conservancy? Because there have been a lot of influential people involved in that over the years.
Yeah. A lot of them have died. Hugh Willis, Grant Cottam, hadn't died, but he's out of it. Ari Lux was here, and then he went to Ohio, and he became a national board of governors,
mm-hmm.
and I see him occasionally. And then Cliff Messenger was a very strong chairman, and he also became national chairman.
Mm-hmm.
And there were all kinds of staff that mm-hmm. wouldn't mean anything to you. But.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, now, I'm trying to think. I can't think of his name, but I live in the town of Dunn. And there's somebody that was on the town board in the town of Dunn for years and years who was very involved in the Nature Conservancy.
Well, Cal DeWitt.
Cal DeWitt, yeah. That's what I was thinking of, right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, of course.
Those of us that live in the town of Dunn owe a lot to him.
And I knew Julia Beethoven well.
Oh, sure. Okay.
And you probably did.
I certainly knew her and had met her. And okay, that was just a kind of personal thing because of the town of Dunn.
Yeah, I met Dr. Watts a few times.
Mm-hmm.
Not from Nature Conservancy, from the Dane County Natural Heritage mm-hmm. Board. That was on that.
Then you came back to the university, though, to work, right? I mean, you had your job with the library school, didn't like that, then you couldn't stay there. And then,
well, after about 6 months, I think, of being unemployed, Fan Taylor knew Clay Schoenfeld.
Okay.
And she knew he was trying to get this conservation education program going.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember she said, I'll recommend you, but for goodness sakes, promise you won't cry, because my morale was so low at that point that I didn't think I was qualified for anything. In fact, I went to a guy who was doing advising, what do you call it, for somebody taught a new career. I can't remember his name, but I remember he had quite a staff, and I think maybe I'd taken some tests, but he walked by and sort of looked at me. Then he came back in, and he maybe asked me one or two questions, and he said, I wouldn't recommend you for anything, no matter what. Of course, I burst into tears. And he said, you're just running yourself down so badly. But he was very rough about it,
uh-huh.
pretty hard. But he was right,
mm-hmm.
because he got me so mad that I went and had my transcript dug out from underground, and just finally talked myself into getting some confidence back. But that's when Fan recommended me to Clay Schoenfeld.
And you made it through the interview without crying?
Yes, I think so. Well, Clay Schoenfeld, did you ever meet him?
No.
Well, not my favorite character, but his wife had had mental problems, psychiatric, and he knew I had. So he was quite nice about that.
Mm-hmm.
But he was awful to Clayton.
So they offered you the position of Editor of Technical Publications.
No, that was in Summer Sessions.
Oh.
And you see, he was director of Summer Sessions, but he was sort of doing this on the side.
I see.
He had talked the Department of Wildlife Ecology into letting him run this class. His field was journalism.
Oh, okay.
But he did have this interdisciplinary course,
mm-hmm.
in which he'd get people from all over, and he would also get applicants for interviews. And these applicants for the job would come, and he'd get me to take them around to be interviewed, which I did.
Mm-hmm.
And Dick McCabe shared the office with me. Dick McCabe was his TA for the class.
Mm-hmm.
I was just helping. Well, I used to go to the lectures and the committee meetings, but I also remember he asked me and Dick to help grade the exam.
Mm-hmm.
And he had one question in there where he matched statements with authors, you know, that kind of thing.
Yep.
And there was a statement attributed to Aldo Leopold that I couldn't find, didn't ring a bell. Dick McCabe did the same thing. We both at night pored through everything and couldn't find it. The next morning I asked him, where was that clay? We can't find it. I made it up. And I lit into her mind and said, that's just outrageous. And I really blew up. I mean, it was just terrible.
Yeah.
But he was that kind of man.
Oh, dear. Well, did you enjoy your position at the Institute for Environmental Studies?
Oh, yes. I mean, I was delighted to move.
Uh-huh.
But, of course, when I started, there wasn't any publication. Nobody had done the research yet. So for a while, I had to sort of make work for myself. And for a while, my office was in the meteorology building.
Hmm.
And Reed Bryson, of course, was getting all this information, literature and stuff to do with air pollution. And I started putting these things in the little black boxes, just didn't want them to be thrown away.
Mm-hmm.
And it grew and grew and grew. But I don't remember how I filled my time otherwise until somebody had some research to get edited.
Mm-hmm. And then were you always in the meteorology building, or did you move?
No, then I moved out to the Wharf building.
Oh.
I was there for a long time on mm-hmm. the first floor.
Oh, okay.
And that was kind of fun because space science, I mean, the campus planning was in the same building.
Right.
So I got to know quite a lot of them.
Mm-hmm. Oh. You want to take that? I can pick up. So you were in the Wharf building. And did you end your career there in the Wharf building?
No. Because the Institute was all scattered around.
Yeah,
everywhere.
That's what I'm thinking of, right.
We had us on the first floor and Earthwatch radio people and publication. We had, and by then, this library that
mm-hmm.
I had started.
Mm-hmm.
But on the fifth floor, I think, we had officers and some of the professors and the directors.
Mm-hmm.
But then I think after about 3 years maybe, I was moved to Science Hall.
Okay.
I had a wonderful office on the corner. Could still see a little corner of the lake. It was a wonderful office.
That's where I remember it to be,
yeah.
Was Science Hall. Yeah,
yeah.
So I didn't realize it had all of that history in other buildings.
Yeah.
Okay. And so, and when did you retire?
My 70th birthday, on June 30th, the end of the fiscal year, made it very easy for everybody.
Right, right. And was that a difficult decision to retire?
No. In fact, most should have retired sooner. But I was already so involved with Nature Conservancy, and I think I was also a trustee, yes I was, of Northland College. So I had plenty of extra things to do.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't worried about being idle.
Now, how did that position come about as trustee of Northland College?
My sister lived in Washington, and around the corner was a couple named Madison. Bob Madison was a Wendell Willkie type of Republican, and he had some high position in the Nixon administration, I guess. His wife, everybody disliked him, but his wife was very nice and was a friend of my sister's. Well, they had a place up in Cable, and he had been a whitewater canoeist, friend of Sigurd Olson. Is that name?
Oh,
right?
Sure.
Okay, well, Bob Madison was getting tired of federal service, and he conceived the idea of starting a thing called the Sigurd Olson Environmental Institute. And he persuaded Sig Olson to sponsor this, and he persuaded Northland College to take it on. Hmm. Well, he had ambition to turn it into something like the College of the Atlantic. Mm-hmm. Well, just, I've got to back up a little. Mm-hmm. When he was decided to do this, my sister said, well, his wife, Jane, was so naive. She came for lunch one day and said, Emily, I've just read the most wonderful book. Do you know it? Sand County Almanac. But he was quite knowledgeable. Mm-hmm. Anyway, when he did get the thing started, my sister said, when they move out there, will you help them? So I invited them down for a couple of weekends and had a party here. And I knew a lot of people by then. I knew mm-hmm. the president of the university, I think it was Ed Young then, and Chuck Engman, and a lot of people in Extension. I knew Norm Anderson, who was the Speaker of the Assembly. So I asked everybody I could think of that would be useful. And then he could go to their offices and say, I met you at Emily Early's, and this is what I'm trying to do up north.
Uh-huh.
And so as a reward, he put me on his first advisory council, which was kind of fun. He had very interesting people, mostly from the Twin Cities. But anyway, it was kind of fun. But there became a feud between the president of the university, a man named Malcolm McLean, and Bob Madison, because Bob was trying to make the college become the environmental college. The rest of the trustees and Malcolm wanted to stay a liberal arts college with a side interest. And each one would tell me how awful the other one was. So I finally decided this isn't worth it, and I got off.
Yeah. Did you have an opinion on what it should become, or should it stay?
I like just staying an adjunct.
Uh-huh. Is it still there?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's really interesting. I never knew that about that college.
Yeah. So I got off. My mother hadn't died yet, and so it didn't have any extra money anyway to help them. But I recommended, I think, Charlie Bradley, Nina Leopold's husband. And so I stayed on giving $100 a year and still interested, kept mm-hmm. in touch with Malcolm McLean, the president. Well, then they finally got a building built, and by then the feud had ended so that Bob Madison and Malcolm McLean, they're going to put on a big do when they dedicated the building. Gaylord Nelson came, and of course the Sigurd Olsons were there. Well, the Madisons invited me to come up for the weekend, stay in their beautiful new guest room in their house on Lake Namakagan or mm-hmm. Owen, I don't remember which. Mm-hmm. And Nina Bradley was invited to be a speaker because she'd given Leopold Pines for the building.
Mm.
So I called Nina and I said, where are you staying? Oh, in a motel. So I called Jane Madison and said, can I bring Nina Bradley to share the guest room? Which they did.
Uh-huh.
Well, it was a great fun weekend. The Madisons had a party for the whole Sigurd Olson family. Well, the next day, I think it was, Malcolm McLean called the president. He said, Emily, we need another woman on our board of trustees, especially an environmental one. And so he twisted my arm. It was fun. It was a wonderful board, very hard working.
Uh-huh. And you feel again you accomplished some things on that board? I mean, was it worthwhile in that sense too?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
But the long drive finally got me down.
Yeah.
So I quit after 25 years or something. But anyway, that's why I wasn't worried about being retired.
Right, right. What other things have you done since you've retired?
Well, I was on three boards at one point, the Northland Trustees Nature Conservancy and the Dane County Natural Heritage Foundation, which is now called, that's what he was calling about. There's mm-hmm. a big meeting tonight, Natural Heritage Land Trust.
Mm-hmm.
And then when Thousand Friends were started, I went on that board.
Mm-hmm.
My term as chairman of Nature Conservancy had ended, and I was going to start a year as emeritus trustees. So Dave Chislevitz, whom I knew well because he'd been on work staff of Nature Conservancy,
mm-hmm.
said, well, then, Emily, you can come on my board. So I was delighted.
And now what are some of the things that 1,000 Friends have done?
Oh, they're the ones who started smart growth, land
okay.
use planning.
Sure,
yeah,
sure, okay.
So I became a great friend, well, I already was. Okay. In fact, you know, he had me, I'm listed as his treasurer.
That's
I
right.
never handled a single dollar, just a paper treasurer, because he wanted to get in the old people.
Well, not just the old people, I'm sure. I'm sure that was a very familiar name to a lot of people. Well, that's really... So there's very little in terms of environmental issues that you haven't been involved in then in
that's
Dane
right,
County.
Yeah.
Well, actually in the state. Yeah. It goes beyond Dane County.
Yeah. You know, Ron Seeley
yeah.
wrote a profile of me.
When was that?
About July 4th, about a year and a half ago,
okay.
maybe 2 years ago.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. It was very flattering.
I'll have to look that up, because I must have read it. I usually do read his columns, but I should look it up again.
I wonder if I have an extra copy. I think I probably do.
Yeah.
Anyway, my career with Nature Conservancy has just ended, because now I have to go off.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll keep on going as Gene Rourke does, as an emeritus trustee. You can still go to meetings,
mm-hmm.
and occasionally you have some kind of committee appointment.
Mm-hmm.
But not 1,000 Friends has asked me to stay on that board. I said, you're crazy, because I have such trouble hearing in these meetings.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But they have asked me, so I'll at least be on that a little while longer.
Well, we all thank you for that. Now, you talked about bird watching. Is that one of your passions? Or
what? Oh, yes.
Yeah.
And after I retired particularly, and by then I did have some extra money, I took as many birding trips as I could in all parts of the world.
Talk about that, please.
Oh,
that's what
wonderful.
I've heard you're quite a traveler.
I have to stop now, unfortunately, because if I fall, it would hold up the whole trip.
Yeah.
Besides, I can't hear the birds. And now my eyes, after all, I'm going to be 90, and your eyes don't function quite as well. So I miss a lot of the birds.
Mm-hmm.
Too frustrating.
Yeah.
In fact, one of my last birding trips was, I took my older daughter to Panama. There's a place called the Canopy Tower in Panama City, which was built at the start of World War II so that we could watch the canal.
Mm-hmm.
At the highest point in Panama, in a national park. Well, after the war, this thing stood empty for quite a while until a smart businessman decided to turn it into a hotel for birders. 7 stories, no elevator, and 24 beds. But in a beautiful setting,
uh-huh.
good food, comfortable, so I went. And I had been in Panama about 4 or 5 years before. I always travel with the Victor Emmanuel Nature Tours. Victor Emmanuel has no connection with the King of Italy. He's a naturalist from Austin, Texas.
Uh-huh.
And they're sort of the Cadillac of bird tours.
Oh.
Roger Torrey Peterson was one of the original trustees.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, Victor Emmanuel had a seminar workshop in Panama City to introduce people to tropical birding. And I went to the first one, and the bird I missed was the male rosy thrush tanager. Beautiful bird.
Mm-hmm.
I saw the female, and Bob Ridgely, who was one of my leaders, tried hard to find me the male, but I kept missing it. Well, then 4 or 5 years later, when I went back with Dorothy, I told the leader, I want to see the Mayo Rosie press manager. The very last day, we were in some national, we took side trips from this place, and they said, yes. Well, Don and all two of these listers saw it as signal to me, and they charged ahead of me.
Oh.
Flushed it, so I never saw it.
Oh.
I hate listers.
That's terrible. Oh, I'm sorry.
So I've been an enthusiastic birder for years, but I'm not a lister.
Uh-huh. Now, where else have you been?
My first one, I went with Frances Hurst. You probably interviewed her.
No. I've just started the interview.
She now. She died.
Yeah, but she may have been. She may have been interviewed.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
Laura Smale used to do this.
Yes, she did.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then my first tropical birding trip. I'd been on Madison Audubon trips to Texas and a few other places in this country.
Mm-hmm.
But my first out of the country one was to Costa Rica. Frances Hurst asked me to go. It was a trip organized by the Schlitz Audubon and Milwaukee Public Museum. And then there were some people from Pennsylvania, as I remember. But the leader was the director of, then director of the Schlitz Audubon in Milwaukee. Anyway, I got hooked on tropical birds. And the next summer, this guy who had been the Schlitz one was fired, and he went to a nature center in New Hampshire, and he got to know Bob Ridgely, who was the dean of South American Birds, and his family had a place there. So Bob Ridgely and this guy, whose name I can't remember, organized a trip to Trinidad and Tobago, I think under the auspices of Victor Emmanuel, because Bob Ridgely was one of their leaders. And this guy invited a few of us who'd been on the Costa Rica trip. Not everybody, just a few, I think, of the most enthusiastic people.
Mm-hmm.
One was a very nice woman my age, Maude Shepherd, who died last year. She agreed to go.
Okay.
Peg Loomis was the then head of Madison Audubon and a friend of hers, both attractive young women in their 40s. Well, at Kennedy Airport, we were introduced to the co-leader, Bob Ridgely, and I said to myself, I wish I were 35 years younger. This is the best-looking man I've ever met. He was also very nice. Well, he and Peg Loomis fell in love.
Oh, my.
And at the end of 2 weeks, they had decided to quit their respective spouses and live together, and they did.
Oh, my.
And for about at least 5 years, maybe longer, they couldn't get married because her father had lots of money, can't remember his name at the moment, and could afford lawyers and keep him from having any paternal rights at all.
Oh.
But they finally got married, and it's been a very successful marriage.
Uh-huh.
But that was my first Victor Emmanuel trip, I think. Then Bob Ridgely, because he was a friend of Peg Loomis, Peg Loomis's husband was a dentist in Monona. I can't remember his name, first name. So Peg would come out to see her sons, and Bob became a friend I'm having trouble with names, the co-founder of the Crane Foundation.
Okay. I don't know the name.
Ron Sowie.
Mm-hmm.
Ron decided to organize a Victor Emmanuel trip with Bob Ridgely to go to India to show people where he'd done his PhD work on cranes.
Mm.
So I signed up to go on that. So did Maude Shepherd. So did a very nice woman named Betty Bungie, who died a couple of years ago. And then Ron Sowie died.
That I remember.
Mm-hmm. He was cooking Christmas dinner for family and friends, and they found him on the floor, an aneurysm. but he was very nice. Mm-hmm. And I remember he called me up. He said, Emily, I'm so glad you're going on this trip, because you'll be willing to look at a few things besides birds, won't you? Anyway, Victor Emmanuel offered us our money back, but we decided to go anyway, Betty, Buggy, and Marge Shepard and I. And the substitute leader was a man named David Bishop, who was wonderful. He was, this is going to take much too long.
Well, just doesn't matter to me. It's your time.
But you can't use all that.
Yes, I can.
Anyway, David Bishop was a Britisher who was a member, a family, oldest son, I think, of a very prosperous middle-class English. I think his father either owned a shoe business or something. And he was very disappointed that this handsome young man wouldn't go to college. David Bishop became a London bobby.
Hmm.
And I remember he said one of his first assignments was to help raid a whorehouse, and he fell through the ceiling. But another thing that happened was that one day a little boy came up to him with an injured bird. And I don't know whether David knew there was a nature center on his beat or whether he looked it up in the London equivalent of the Yellow Pages. But he took the boy and the bird there, and they couldn't save the bird, but they got fascinated with this good-looking bobby. And they said, why don't you come out with us on your day off? We'll lend you some binoculars. Well, he got hooked.
Huh.
And he started doing research, and he discovered that nobody had been studying the birds of Wallacea, Indonesia, and since Alfred Russel Wallace. So he applied for got some money to send him to Papua New Guinea.
Hmm.
And he spent, I think, 8 years there. And he actually got to know more birds than anybody else, but he didn't have a PhD.
Mm-hmm.
So when he, a couple of years ago, did a field guide, he had to have it with somebody else who had a PhD.
Sure. So he was the guide in India then?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I liked him so much that I decided to go with him. My next trip was to Indonesia.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a very primitive trip because there were only six of us. And we often had to stay in very remote places. I remember one, the women were in, it was just a very primitive hut, not no more than a hut. But the men were in one room, the women were in another, on cots, and then there was a room in between where we ate. Well, I had to share a cot with a woman who snored, for one thing, and it was terribly hot. There were four women crammed into this place, and a rat ran over my foot.
Gosh.
Well, I tried to tell myself that it was a moth or something, because I could see the moth, but then one of the other women screamed, and it was a rat. And another place on that trip, the toilet was just a pit.
Oh, dear.
And there was a python in it. But it was fun.
Okay.
Well, shush.
I hope that gets picked up.
This one will do. An English friend gave me that one, which is Japanese birds.
Oh.
I think it's going to... Anyway, I loved the trip and became friends of two of the people on it, a very nice doctor from Louisiana. I think he was a dermatologist or an ophthalmologist. Haven't seen him for a while. Anyway, I decided to go on another trip with David Bishop to Papua New Guinea, and they were on that too.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I took two trips in 1 year that time. I couldn't always do that. And then after that, I think...
Now, I have to ask, was Papua New Guinea, was that any less primitive than Indonesia?
Yes. By then, there were some pretty nice hotels.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Oh, yeah, it was much more civilized.
Uh-huh.
In fact, there was a woman on the Indonesian trip who had been to Papua New Guinea with him, and had been urged by Victor Emmanuel to go with him. And she was outraged because she'd been told it would be comfortable. She complained the whole time.
Oh, dear.
Anyway, I think then I signed up to go to Australia. Oh, by then David Bishop had remarried a woman who lived in Australia and had a new stepson. But anyway, I knew that. But I signed up to go to Australia with him the next year. Mm-hmm. And he said, well, Emily, if you're going to spend all that money on airfare, you might as well do my New Zealand trip too. I would have been gone 7 weeks.
Oh, my.
In those days, I had a cleaning woman who would move in here and take care of my dogs.
Uh-huh.
So that wasn't a problem.
Right.
But anyway, a few weeks before the Australia trip, got a letter from Victor Emmanuel that David Bishop was reneging on that trip because he thought he ought to spend more time with his new wife and stepson. So I called up Bob DeBellevue, this ophthalmologist, dermatologist, and I said, what's this substitute leader like? Oh, he's all right, but why don't you come to Southeast Brazil with us, with Ted Parker? Well, I'd heard of Ted Parker. He was famous. But have you ever heard his name?
No.
Well, wonderful guy. He said, I know there's a place. So I did. Well, I was still planning to go to New Zealand when I got home. Another letter. He was backing out of that, too. So then I called Bob DeBellevue again. Said, what's this? Oh, he's all right, but why don't you come to Peru with us? There's still a place. So I then had four trips with that wonderful leader, Bob, Ted Page. Mm-hmm. Ecuador. Or two in Brazil, and anyway, four.
Now, did Ecuador include the Galapagos Islands?
No. I've often been urged to go there, but that's one place I've never really wanted to go.
Mm-hmm.
I prefer rainforests, and there are too darn many tourists who go to Galapagos, and I've seen so many slides that I don't need to go.
Sure, sure.
Anyway,
Peru.
Oh, no, Ted Parker.
Oh.
He was in his early 40s. And he'd fallen in love with one of the leaders on that trip, and I'd watched them fall in love. So he and Jackie were with a botanist doing low-level flying for RARE, one of those agencies that wants to save areas.
Mm-hmm.
And they hit a mountain.
Oh,
and he wasn't killed immediately, but he and the pilot and the botanist were in the forward part of the plane, and they couldn't move, they couldn't get out. But she could hold his hand, and he said, go get help. Don't stay here, go get help. Well, they had to walk, and she was injured, so it was a long walk with one other woman. By the time they got back with help, the men had all died. It was awful. It, the front page news here, because the botanist had gotten his degree here, I think.
Huh.
But Ted Page was so well known that it hit the Wall Street Journal, and New York Times, all kinds of. So I cut out all these clippings, and then I wrote Jackie and sent them, and turned out she hadn't seen any of it.
Oh, my. Yeah. Oh, that's very sad.
Well, then, after quite a few trips in South America, I decided to go with David Bishop to Malaysia, I think, and Thailand. I've taken a lot of trips.
Did you ever get to Australia?
No, not till this last summer.
This last summer, okay.
When we built in 3 nights over in Sydney, because I wanted to go to the Opera House.
Oh, sure.
And we went in the Opera House and heard Falstaff. And it's just as wonderful inside as outside. Yes. No, I never did.
Well, did you do any bird watching when you were in New Zealand?
No. Oh, yes, we did take a few side trips where there were supposed to be birds.
Mm-hmm.
And we did see some penguins at a special place, but there aren't that many birds.
No.
Have you been?
Yeah, we were there about the same time you were, and I was surprised at the fact. There aren't many animals or birds.
No, I'd already been warned this, but I didn't believe it.
Yeah.
No, you're driving around in this beautiful country that looked like Far West, but no antelopes, no birds.
Right.
Harriet, one court, the marshal, but nothing else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was very strange.
Well, anyway, I've been on a lot of trips. Yeah.
Well, that really ends my questions, but is there anything that you'd like to add to this tape before we turn it off? This has just been fascinating for me.
Well, I didn't say much about the Institute, but I had a wonderful time doing that.
Well, tell us about it. Tell me about it.
Because 1 month I'd be working with engineers, and the next month botanists, and the next month geologists, and a whole caboodle.
Mm-hmm. And was it, and you did their editing?
Yeah. Yeah. I tried to get them to write in comprehensible English. Couldn't really do that with the computer people. You know about GPS and things like
yes.
that. Well, this was the beginning of that. They were dreaming this up. So that was fascinating to edit those papers. But you couldn't get rid of all the computer lingo.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But they've done it. I mean, they had these dreams about that they'd be used in land use planning.
Right, right. Well, I would imagine you learned an awfully lot then, just, you know, being the editor of all of those papers and being able to interact with the faculty members.
It was great fun.
And were you able to boss them around at all, or did you?
Yes.
And they took your advice?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, that's great.
Yeah. Well, I usually worked with the grad student who'd written it.
Oh,
But I got to know the faculty people, too.
Right.
It was fun.
Right. Yeah. And how many years did you do that?
18, I think.
18?
Or maybe it was 18 years of university service, but I had that short period with the library school.
Mm-hmm.
But I went to the Institute in 1970, and I retired in 86, 16 years.
Okay. I know what I was going to ask you. After reading your autobiography, you talked about the Walrus Club and how important that was to you. Would you talk about that a little bit? Because I don't know much about that.
Well, the Walrus Club was started by some faculty women who had education and brains and got tired of female chit-chat, and they had maids so they could had leisure to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And the original ones included, one of them was Dorothy Reed Mendenhall, but then Mrs. Van Hees, there were several who were wives of presidents and faculty. And it started with just a few, but it's never been more than 12. You know, we're a little low now because too many people have full-time jobs and don't want to do a paper.
Mm-hmm.
You have to do a paper or a talk as well as entertain. The name came from 'tis time to talk of many things, said the walrus to the carpenter.
I see.
And there were a few sort of unwritten rules, the 4 D's. Weren't supposed to talk about disease, domestics, and everybody had maids in those days, or descendants. Okay. And then maybe we sort of added divorce later. But when I was asked to join, everybody had to put on a 3-course luncheon. And if you didn't have it, you had to have a caterer. So I got this great caterer that one of them recommended, a lovely woman whose son was a professor in the engineering school, a very nice woman. And one member of the Walrus Club arrived half an hour early. Mrs. Rosenberry, Lois Matthews Rosenberry. Did you know that name?
No.
Well, she'd been dean of women. And then she married the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of State. Nobody really liked her anyway, but she arrived half an hour early and said she needed a nap. Well, I had managed to get this part cleaned up, but I hadn't really tidied the upstairs much. The children rushed them off to school. But at that point, this was a bedroom. The kitchen stopped here. So my son was living in this little tiny bedroom. So I did send her in there, but I could have killed her.
Oh, I've never heard of that before. I need a nap.
It's awful. Well, anyway, it was great fun. I mean, I was terrified. There was a 50-year age gap between me as the newest member and the oldest one. It's not that big anymore. I'm the oldest, and the youngest, I think, is, yeah, may almost be 50.
Mm-hmm. And it's by invitation only.
Yeah.
Right? And it's still going strong.
It's not going as strong because it's hard to get people to commit the time.
Oh.
So I think we're down to 10 members, and we haven't yet. They finally made me emeritus, so I don't have to do any paper or entertain. But
so how often would you have to do a paper? Once a year?
Yes, well, maybe every now and then you get a year off, because when there were 12 members and we only met in the winter and the first meeting was just summer reminiscences, so nobody had to do a paper. That was a more social then.
That sounds like a great organization to be a part of.
It is.
Yeah.
Well, Laura Smale came to one meeting once.
Oh, she did? Yeah. To interview everyone?
No, she just, I've forgotten who told her to ask.
Uh-huh.
And she came to see me to see if I'd let her come. But I don't know what she did with it. Whether it gave her the idea of people to interview, I don't know.
Probably did.
I see her sometimes and I don't remember.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that could be. Anything else? Well, I want to thank you. This was fascinating. I really appreciate this. Thank you very much.